Texaco Star Theater. The more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast welcome you to an hour of mirth and melody with our star comedian, Fred Allen, Kenny Baker and Portland Hopper, the Texaco Roundtable, the Martins and Al Goodman's Orchestra. It's Texaco time. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't feel so good tonight. I'm going over there and lie down. You want to know what's wrong with me? Here he is, Fred Allen in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you, too, Mr. Wallington, for that high-octane send-off. That introduction sounded like the deathbed statement of a short-winded racketeer. It had all of the gusto of a few remarks that you'd expect to hear seeping out of an oxygen tank.
Well, I'm sorry, friend. I've got no pep tonight.
Why tonight? Why single out tonight of all nights? You always look as though you were living out a due bill on a coma, Jimmy. You know, you act as though you sent your ambition out to the laundry and they forgot to starch it.
Well, it must be this New York climate.
No, it isn't the climate either. The trouble with you, Jay Wallington, is that you don't eat enough meat.
Now, what's meat got to do with how I
well,
feel?
Everything. You'll have more pep. Haven't you been reading those meat ads in the papers? There are cuts to fit every purse. I mean, there's no excuse. It's not money that's stopping you from eating meat. There is no excuse. Why don't you eat more meat, Jimmy?
Well, I have my reasons.
What reasons?
Cows remind me of my mother-in-law, Fred. I can't seem to go for them.
Oh, that's silly, James. Why, the cow is man's best friend. Now, as a baby, who gives you milk? It's the cow. All through life, who gives you liver, roast beef, steaks, and briskets? It's the cow's big brother, the steer. When you're old and your teeth are gone, who gives you beef broth and nourishing stews? It's the cow, Jimmy. Why, I tell you, James, if you'd only eat more meat, you'd shake off that eternal torpor and become a dynamic organism once more.
Say, maybe you've got something, Fred. I feel better already.
Now, you see, just talking about meat gives you a lift.
You're right, Fred.
Yes, sir. It's the power of suggestion. Jimmy, you're a new man, and you owe your success to meat and to the cow.
You're right, Fred.
And I owe my success...
to the old Ferdinand.
As Mr. Disney might put it, yes. And leaving Mr. Wallington to digest our meaty suggestion, we turn to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents its highlight from the world of news. Albany, New York. Governor of New York, in message to legislature, says that present interest rates on small loans are too high. Licensed moneylenders' rates are limited by state law, but many freelance fly-by-night loan merchants mulct their clients, charging excessive interest rates. Texaco News presents several unfortunate victims of unscrupulous loan merchants. But first, the loan situation is clarified by that eminent loan authority, Mr. Darcy Taub. Now, where do people usually borrow money, Mr. Taub?
There are two sources of supply.
And these are?
One, the legitimate lending companies. They observe the law.
And two?
The loan sharks.
Well, what are loan sharks, Mr. Taub?
Loan sharks are unscrupulous men who pull poor people into doorways and force them to borrow money at exorbitant rates of interest.
They stoop to sharp practice, do they?
A loan shark is like a skunk.
A skunk?
Yeah, if either one gives you a cent, you'll pay through the nose.
Thank you very... Oh, say, before you go, Mr. Taub, what is your advice to the small borrower?
Never borrow money from a stranger.
But if you need money...
Borrow from your relatives. Keep your grief in the family.
Well, thank you very...
Hey, you know where I can get a fin until Friday?
The aquarium is two blocks down. And thank you, Mr. Darcy Taub. A young working girl who inadvertently fell into the clutches of a loan shark and is here to tell her pitiful story is Miss Babs Fenevesi. You were duped, Babs?
Brother, the way I was taken, I could have been an aspirin.
Will you relate your harrowing experience with this loan shark?
Well, I should start from the beginning.
If you will.
Well, one night I'm going home in the subway, and I happened to say to Juanita Rappaport, a girl from the office,
yeah.
I says, if I had $10, Juanita, I'd get me a poignament and a henna rinse.
A poignament and a henna rinse,
huh? Yeah. Well, with that, a strange guy sticks his head over my shoulder and says, get off at the Caldania.
Oh, and did you?
Yeah. The guy tipped his beret. I can see he ain't no rat.
Well, what did he say?
He comes right to the point. He says, you need $10, sister? I got $10. I'm in the loan business. It's your move.
What did you say?
I says, I could use $10, mister, but the party I borrow it from has got to be reliable.
Uh-huh.
With that, I signed some paper.
You didn't see what it was?
It's dark in them phone booths at the Cab Avenue. I couldn't see nothing. I took the $10, and the next night I got the appointment and the henna rinse.
And when did you see this loan shark again?
Saturday. I'm coming out of the office. He's waiting.
What did he want?
A dollar. He says I got to pay $1 a week interest. I've been paying $1 a week ever since.
When did you start?
March 1937.
For 4 years you've been paying $1 a week? Why, that's $208. Why don't you just give him back his $10?
Not me. Who can play at that jipping game, mister?
But you keep paying that interest.
I'm leading the loan shark on.
Ooh.
If that crook thinks he's getting his $10 back, he's nuts.
And your advice to other working girls is?
Girls, if you ever go into a phone booth with a loan shark, don't sign nothing.
Let us make that our thought for today. And thank you. And thank you, Babs Fenevesi. A man about turf who finally turned the tables on a loan shark is Samson Blitz. Now, Samson...
Call me Longshot Sam, bud.
Longshot Sam?
Yeah, that's me tag around racetracks.
Oh, you make a living following the horses, do you?
What living? I keep going with transfusions.
You're getting them from elephants, are you? I thought there was big money following the horses.
The horses I follow the horses.
Don't any of your horses ever come in?
Brother, if I had had a bet on Paul Revere, the British would have beat him in the Lexington.
Well, tell me, what happened with the loan shark, Sam?
Well, one spring I'm out to Jamaica. It's brutal. I can't pick nothing. I wasn't eating. I even quit picking me teeth.
Well, that's as low as a horse player can go, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, one night, I'm coming over me racing form. A horse catches me eye. Bald Hyman.
Uh-huh.
I got an Uncle Hyman, and he's bald. It's a hutch.
So?
So the next morning, I borrow 200 smackers from this Shylock. Bang, it's down on Bald Hyman on the nose.
And which horse won the race?
Hairy Harry. Paul Hyman got his neck caught in the barrier. He didn't even show.
You were out $200.
Not only that, but the loan shark starts hounding me. For 3 years, every track I hit, there's this loan shark putting a bite on me.
And your luck never changed?
Not till last winter in Florida. I'm out at the dog track. Suddenly, for no reason, I'm hot.
Good for you.
The first race, I win $2,000. I dump it back. Yeah. Every race, I'm winning. Yeah. I'm ahead $18,000, and I'm letting it ride.
You won again?
The last race, I break the dog track.
Well, how much money did you collect?
What money? The track run out of dough. They started paying off bets with dogs.
And you?
I come home with 50 greyhounds.
50, dog.
Yeah, I'm coming up the hotel steps with these 50 hounds on a rope.
Yeah?
Who's waiting for me outside the door?
The loan shark?
Yeah. And again he starts putting a bite on me. I see in red.
What did you do?
I says, listen, Shylock, for 3 years you've been putting a bite on me. Tonight, I'm putting a bite on you.
Yeah?
With that, I let me 50 dogs loose and yell, sig them.
And?
I ain't seen that loan shark or them dogs since.
So the moral is...
If you want to see the end of a loan shark, set a dog on him from behind.
Clever, no end. And thank you, Long Shot Sam. And now in rebuttal, we hear a loan shark presenting the money lender's side of the story. We introduce the most unpopular Shylock on the West Side. What is your name again, brother?
They call me Martin the Greps.
Martin the Greps.
Yeah.
Well, now, as a loan shark, Martin, what is your defense?
Well, there's two sides to it.
I see.
All you ever hear is the suckers beefing. How about the shark?
Well,
All right. So I'm getting 80 or 90% of me money. Am I happy?
Well, don't tell me that you fellas have troubles.
Loan sharking. Heh, it's a rat's life. Ducking in doorways to do business. Your stockings full of money all the time. Taking off your shoes to make a loan in the rain. Slugging clients that don't pay.
Yes, I guess it isn't a bed of roses.
It's depressing. All right, so I'm getting 80 or 90% of me money. Am I happy?
You mean that people take advantage of you?
Let me cite it, for instance.
I wish you would.
2 years ago, I loaned a guy $40. Mm-hmm. The note falls due. He can't pay.
Did you sue?
He ain't got nothing but an accident policy. I had it made over to me.
Oh, so that if he had an accident...
I would collect. Every day I'm praying for an accident. No luck.
You couldn't get your money?
Not only no dough, the guy keeps getting sick. I gotta pay for doctors.
Well, why?
I gotta get him well so as he can have an accident. I'm spending a fortune.
Really?
4 times he's got pneumonia with night noises yet. Once his appendix has got to come out.
Well, he owed you plenty.
Well, the only way I can get even by now, he's got to have a fatal accident. A fatal accident pays double indemnity.
Well, what did you do?
Well, it's obvious. I arranged for a fatal accident.
Well, naturally.
Shows you the gratitude of some people.
Well, how do you mean?
After all I've been for this dirty two-timer, I got everything fixed.
Yeah?
This morning, owing me all this dough, mind you, with interest, he died.
From a fatal accident?
From natural causes.
That dirty double crosser.
Yeah.
Well, Morton, I guess that's the loan shark game.
Well, it's like I say. All right, so I'm getting 80 and 90% of my money. Am I happy?
No. Thank you, Morton the Greps. And now, in an effort to stop Morton from grepsing before his greps turns to wrath, and we have the greps of wrath on our hands, Kenny Baker rushes to the rescue with his version of High on a Windy Hill.
My name. must be. When will I see your face? Why do you just elude me and leave me this lonely space? My heart stands still. Oh, I can hear you calling my name into eternity. Your love will bear. Forget your voice that calls my name.
Thank you, Kenny. That was very nice. Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you next...
Boy, is he funny!
Larry, I'm not that funny. Who's doing that?
It's that man down in the front row, Fred.
What is it, hysterics? Say, would you come up here just a second,
oh,
sir?
Oh, no, I can't get any closer to you. You're killing me.
What are you laughing at? I'm not saying anything funny. I haven't for 10 minutes.
Oh, it's not you. You're not funny. It's your Adam's apple.
My Adam's apple?
Yeah, the way it slides up and down when you talk, it's a riot, huh? Do it some more.
I sit up all night, night after night, all night trying to think of jokes, and this gentleman laughs because I have a flexible Adam's apple. Get him out of here, Larry.
Oh, no, Fred, I agree with him. I like flexibility, too, only I go for flexible power, the kind of flexible power you get with Sky Chief. And you're geared up to flexible power with Sky Chief, Texaco's different premium gasoline. Call for a quick start, and an instant surging rush of power snaps your engine into action. Ease off, and Sky Chief power idles down to a confident murmur. Open up on the highway, and you flow along. Give her the gun at the base of a steep hill, and you float right up. That's flexible power for you. Sky Chief responds every minute you're at the throttle. Yes, there's a real lift and thrill in flying the highways with Sky Chief. Your Texaco dealer's luxury gasoline for those who want the best.
of the Sun, played by Al Goodman, the Texaco Dud, and his sluggish element. And now, let me see what's next. I've got to make a note to tune in on Mary Margaret McBride tomorrow afternoon. She's talking about our program. I've got to go and call her. Oh, hello, Portland. I was just reminiscing. Portland, of all people.
Mr. Allen.
I was just rummaging around my old mental souvenirs here.
Uh-huh.
I was just going here. You had your mouth open before. Was there something you were going to say?
Yes.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What is that? Are you studying to be a contralto through the mail?
No, I'm an Indian.
Oh, now, look, Portland.
Not Portland. Call me Little Field Mouse.
You should have another arm when you have a part like this. One to go over your mouth and two to hold the script there. Your name is Little Field Mouse? What is that?
Well, it's the new name that Kenny gave me.
For what?
Kenny says he's going to be in your Western sketch tonight.
Oh, you mean so he's getting into character?
Yes. Kenny's changed his name to Bad Bill Baker. He says he's a Western outlaw.
You know, he did look bow-legged when he walked out to sing his song before. But I thought he had pressed his pants over a barrel or something. I didn't know it was a character.
Kenny's been reading a book on how to act by a Mr. Stanislavski.
Uh-huh.
It says that an actor has to live his part.
Oh, so he named you Little Field Mouse to help out with the atmosphere.
Yes. To Kenny, I'm a little Indian child. A caboose.
A caboose. Portland, if you don't stop stooging for Kenny...
Look out, you know... here he comes.
Whoa, Platinum. Hi, Galoots.
Hello. Come out from behind those sound effects, Kenneth Baker.
The name's Bad Bill Baker, stranger.
Stranger?
See, Mr. Allen?
Ah, howdy, little field mouse.
Now, stop it, Portland. Cut it out. You sound about as much like a squaw as Bonnie Baker does.
Now, wait a minute there, Bud. You're insulting a lady, partner. And out yonder in my country, that means fight.
All right. Break it up, Kenny.
Where I come from, I'm Bad Bill.
Well, around here, you're just Sweet William. You sound like a West End Avenue Westerner.
Come again with that city talk, partner. I don't Savoy.
That's savvy, Kenny. And do me a favor. De-west yourself.
Well, Kenny can't get out of character, Mr. Allen.
You mean the Stanislavski method? You have a choice with the dollar Russian dinner here. You mean the Stanislavski method has got him?
You should have seen what he did to Mr. Goodman today.
What did he do? Try to brand him?
No. Mr. Goodman was stooping over, tying his shoe. And Kenny...
I'll let him have it with my bow and arrow.
This is reminding me, I, Goodman, have a bone to pick with Mr. Baker.
Bad Bill to you, hombre.
Bad Bill, bad schmill. To you it could belong, this arrow.
Oh, that's... Kenny's all right.
Goodman is asking, what's the big idea? Goodman is a target, maybe?
Sorry, stranger. I shot an arrow. I'll know not where.
I found the arrow, and you know where.
Now, you see, Kenny, you'll wind up hurting somebody in that bad man character yet. Mr. Goodman here is in the sketch tonight, and I'll bet he's never even given a thought to the Wild West.
Goodman is thinking plenty about the West, especially when she is saying, to see me come up sometime.
What the... Where can... I hope someday before you die, a rumor reaches you that such a thing as punctuation has been invented. Where can I have a breakdown? Who started this thing?
Stanislavski, partner. Here's his book.
Oh, who needs the book? Kenny, you put that book on acting back on the piano, and you get out of character this minute.
I can't, partner. Mr. Stanislavski doesn't tell you how to get out. He only tells you how to get in. I'm in. I can't get out.
Look, I'll give you one more chance. For the last time, Bad Bill, are you willing to be just plain Kenny Baker again?
I'm willing, Pod, but it's out of my hands. Tell him, little field mouse.
Now, wait a minute. You keep out of this, Portland. There's only one... Tell your writer to get it down a half a tone the next time you're... There's only one way to fix this, Kenny. How did you first get into this character?
I thought myself into it.
Well, thought yourself out of it.
How, Tenderfoot?
Now, look. You are a Western... You are a... You don't mean that. It says that there. Look, you are a Western outlaw, Kenny. Now, if the president pardons you, you won't be an outlaw anymore.
How do I get to see the president?
With the Stanislavski method. You can think yourself into an interview.
Ah, kin?
Why, certainly. Go ahead and try. Make with the mind, Kenny.
Ah, Bad Bill Baker, I'm in the White House. Abraham Lincoln is president. I'm standing in front of Abraham Lincoln.
Take your hat off, Kenny.
Please, Mr. Lincoln. Please pardon me, sir. I'll be a good boy.
Ask him if he can free Rochester while you're there.
How's it coming, Kenny?
Shh, Porty. The president's talking. Yes, Mr. Lincoln? Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Well?
Did you hear what Mr. Lincoln said?
Why, no.
I'm pardoned. I'm not Bad Bill the Outlaw anymore.
Well, good. Now that you're through with this nonsense, you go over and rehearse your number.
What for? I won't be here to sing it.
Why not?
I gotta make Denver by sundown.
Denver? Now, wait a minute. You're not an outlaw anymore.
I know. Mr. Lincoln just made a Pony Express rider out of me. Hi-yo, partner!
Now, Kenny, you...
Yee-ho!
Kenny, you quit bucking and come back here.
I can't. I got to hit the trail.
Now, listen, Gene Autry with the light brown mare. You are not leaving this studio.
Stand aside. You're holding up the U.S. mail, gringo.
Oh.
How are you going to get him out of this, Mr. Allen?
Well, I'll have to get him fired, that's all. I wonder if I can get in to see Lincoln. Where's that Stanislavski book?
Ah, you're wasting your time, partner. Mr. Lincoln's tied up. When I come out, I saw Mason and Dixon going in.
If I could only get another Lincoln.
Well, can't Mr. Goodman act like President Lincoln and fire Kenny from the Pony Express?
But Goodman can't act.
Goodman can't act, he says. I have just been reading Stanislavski. Put a clove in my mouth, and I, Goodman, am a ham already.
Mr. Goodman, you'll be Abraham Lincoln.
No, no, not that. Anything.
Kenny,
but...
you concentrate on Mr. Goodman being Mr. Lincoln.
I will.
Go ahead, Mr. Goodman.
I could fool some of the people some of the time, but other people will know the people I'm fooling some of the time.
Never mind. But... Never mind the prologue. Never mind the prologue, Maestro. Get to the point and fire Kenny.
Okay. So I, President Lincoln, do hereby accusing you, Baker, of being guilty of gross negligee.
You play Lincoln like a Ford V8.
Gosh, Mr. Lincoln, you mean...
Yes. I, Lincoln, you, Baker, am Canning. You are no longer a phony express.
Oh, boy, did you hear that? I'm through. I'm just little, simple, wide-eyed Kenny again.
The lovable Claude. Well, now that we're all back to normal once more...
Gosh, wasn't Mr. Goodman swell as Mr. Lincoln?
Raymond Massey should live so long. Now, let's get on with the program.
Ready, F.A.
Ready, Mr. Allen.
Well, picking up the threads where we left off, Mr. Goodman starts the music with...
Music, he says. I have to leave now.
Leave?
There's a crowd waiting.
What crowd?
In 15 minutes, I've got to make a speech at Gettysburg.
Does it. I give up. Now, ladies and gentlemen, while I step out to get measured for a straitjacket, the Martins will regale you with their version of La Conga Pasa.
Calling, the conga's calling, for hear the tom-tom of native drums. Chant to the conga's rhythm, you can't resist it, the conga's being as savvy sad. Feel how the rhythm takes you and how it breaks you to sweet romance. I love music playing, my love hearts are swaying to a conga melody. I'm enraptured, we dance, I've been captured by this songbook rhapsody. Don't blame the sweet desire that your eyes inspire as we dance away.
Hear how it keeps repeating while drums are beating, it's savage dance.
La conga, ya pasa. La conga, la conga, la conga. Bring you
and congratulations on winning the Song Hit Magazine's Plaque of the Month. The Plaque of the Month was awarded to the Martins during the past week. And now, a word from Jimmy Wallington. Hey, Jimmy. Oh, Jimmy.
Oh, huh?
Oh, excuse me.
Yes, right.
Excuse me, Fred. What's the matter?
Well, what's the matter? What's the matter with you? Standing here in a yogi trance or something? Do you throw yourself into a coma while the comedy's on? I use the word comedy loosely here.
Well, I'm sorry, Fred. I was daydreaming.
Daydreaming at this time of night, Jimmy?
You know, I was just wishing that I were a skywriter.
Well, aren't you satisfied with being an announcer?
Yes, but skywriters do things on such a big scale, Fred. Gee, if I could get a plane and a sponsor, I could spread a commercial all over the sky in smoke. Imagine people looking up and saying, "There goes Wallington, the skywriter."
Oh, come on, Pilot Wallington. Bail out. Get down to earth.
Well, for that matter, Fred, do you know that there are down-to-earth messages written in smoke, too?
Well, how do you mean, Jimmy?
Well, take the smoke coming from the exhaust pipe of a car. Now, that's a message that might mean trouble. It's very likely to be a sign of excessive engine wear that only an expensive repair job can correct. But you can do something before your car becomes a smoker. A change to insulated Haviland motor oil will help avoid risks from three sources of wear that commonly cause smoke: heat, cold, and oil impurity. For insulated Haviland stands up under today's high engine temperatures, which break down ordinary oils and expose vital parts to wear. It flows freely in cold weather, too. And that's important, for engines wear faster when starting. Haviland is also distilled to remove carbon-forming impurities. Heed the smoke warning. Change to insulated Haviland at Texaco dealers. The Texaco Star Theater continues immediately after a short pause for your station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WABC, New York.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we revive the Texaco Roundtable. There are so many roundtables and discussion groups on the air these days, all debating momentous questions, that it seems only fitting that one group should dedicate itself to the cause of simple issues and trivia. The Texaco Roundtable invites three members of our studio audience to sit in for an unrehearsed discussion on anything. You can bring your own topic. We'll do what we can with it. No subject too trivial, no topic too insignificant. Now, the meeting is formally open for this evening, the session. Portland presents our first guest.
Mr. Murray Corman from New York City.
Well, good evening, Mr. Corman.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
May I ask you, it's always customary on quiz sessions of this sort to ask a person's profession or business. Why, I don't know. unless we want to know who you are in case furniture is missing or other equipment. May I ask your profession, Mr. Corman?
I'm a photographer.
A commercial photographer, or portrait, or
portrait and theatrical.
Theatrical. Do you
and
know
society photographer?
Society
combination.
Oh, I see. A combination photographer. I where is your? Do you do any commercial work?
Quite a bit.
Are you located here in the city?
Manhattan, on one studio on Madison and one on Broadway.
Oh, that's you all over with the...
all over.
With the tripod.
East and the west side.
With the tripod, hey? Well, tell me, as a commercial and a portrait photographer, Mr. Corman, which would you prefer to photograph, a beautiful girl or a pineapple, since you do...
A beautiful girl.
A beautiful girl?
Which I really do photograph.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. If you had said a pineapple, I was going to send for Bellevue. I was going to ask them to stop by when they made the nightly trip for me. But but doesn't it get... you photograph a lot of beautiful models.
Oh, about 800,000 up to date.
800,000 up to date.
And Jack Benny's blue eyes.
Blue eyes, really? Oh, you sell glasses on the side? But doesn't it get monotonous, all of those beautiful girls, Mr. Corman, all beautiful models day after day? Aren't there times when you just give anything to have a homely dame walk in?
No, I to me, a beautiful woman is like to that poet who wrote about the tree. Nothing lovelier than a tree. To me, there's nothing lovelier than a beautiful woman.
Well, that's the photographer's attitude. Of course, I don't know. If you're a tree surgeon, nothing is as beautiful to you as an old broken-down maple, I mean. All in the point of view. Well, thanks a lot, Mr. Corman. And now, Portland.
Miss Jean Weiss from New York City.
Well, good evening, Miss Weiss.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
May I ask your profession or occupation?
Yes, I'm a secretary. Secretary to Professor Hallenbeck, Teachers College.
Oh, Professor Hallenbeck at Teachers College, are you really? His secretary?
I'm his secretary.
What does the professor specialize in, may I ask?
Adult education, mainly, and sociology, too.
Adult education?
Yes.
What is that? Does he have classes for adults who are in their second childhood? Sort of a kindergarten for adults who are in their second childhood?
Well, not exactly, Mr. Allen. We have classes mostly for teachers of adults.
Oh, for teachers of
that
adults.
Is,
you do it the hard way.
We do it the hard way.
Your face looks... Oh, excuse me. Your face looks awfully familiar, Miss Weiss. Have I seen your... well, it really does. Haven't I seen your picture in the newspapers or the magazines recently, within the last month or so?
I'm afraid you have.
For what?
Well, that's a story. I'll make it as brief as I can.
Would you care to tell her?
Well, I don't know. I've been trying to live it down.
I think we ought to have the truth. Now, after all...
When I was a little girl in elementary school, a good many of us, I think a lot of other children also in the schools at the same age, about the same age that I was, were given intelligence tests.
Oh, and IQ ratings?
That's right.
Oh, I know now. You were a member of the group of child prodigies who came back to Teachers College around the first of the year, the end of December, to report on what had happened to you in later life. Is that right?
And we're caught by some of the photographers your picture and reporters.
Your picture was in the paper. That's right. Well, tell me, were you a child prodigy?
I'm afraid not.
Weren't you? Well, you must have been to acquire that rating.
I don't think my IQ was really very high, and I'm sure that... Well, subsequent events in my life certainly haven't proved anything.
You mean that being a child prodigy has hampered you in later life?
No, I wouldn't want to say that.
Well, how does it feel?
I think I just wasn't a child prodigy.
It was all a huge mistake, huh? Mm-hmm. You're trying to live it down now? Well, of course, I never had that trouble at school. Everyone knew that I was going to grow up to be a radio comedian because as a little boy, I was subnormal and there was no other... But my IQ still is rather low. I've been turned down by two quiz programs. I mean, to participate. Well, thank you, Miss Weiss. And now, Portland?
Mr. Leo Franklin from Washington Heights, New York.
Good evening. You beat me to it. Well, thank you, Mr. Franklin. May I ask your business or profession?
I'm a plumber.
A plumber? Are you really? You have your own firm, do you?
No, I work for someone.
Oh, do you? You plumb for another. Well, tell me, have you done any outstanding plumbing around the city? Have you worked in any of the large buildings?
Yes, and I worked on Radio City.
You did? You didn't do it all alone. You had a boy with you. You did? Did you really work on Radio City?
Yes, sir.
Well, I wish I had known that. I was over there working 2 years ago, and we couldn't stop a hot water faucet. And if I had known where you were... But Radio City is really a wonderful accomplishment, don't you think, group of buildings?
Yes, I think it's one of the greatest in New York.
Development, 14 buildings like that. You know, I never knew till yesterday who the janitor was in Radio City. It's Superman. I never knew. Well, thanks a lot, Mr. Franklin. That seems to bring us to our question. And tonight we take up a matter that concerns impetuous youth. The youth of today, with its clubs and movements, has a tendency to frown on and ignore the customs and manners that were accepted by its parents. Years ago, before a couple married, the immediate families of the prospective bride and groom held a conference and ultimately bestowed their blessings on the couple, or the meeting ended up in a free-for-all, with both families participating. Today, a boy with the key to his father's car and 2 gallons of gas proposes to a girl, and they elope. 2 months later, they turn up on the Goodwill Court. Now, our question tonight is, should boys and girls, the modern youth who have been sold on Cupid, consult their parents before getting married? Now, Mr. Corman, how do you feel about that?
Well, I'm still old-fashioned. I think they should.
You think they should? Are you married?
No.
You are? Well, when you do get married, do you think that you will take the matter up with your parents and the bride's parents to make sure that everyone is happy?
I guess I'll do that.
But while you're taking it up, your father might give you a good tip to abandon the whole project. I know that could happen, too. How do you feel about it, Miss Weiss? Do you think the modern youth should consult the parents or discuss matters before marriage is entered into?
I think they should decide themselves.
You think they should ignore the parents?
No, I don't think they should ignore them. I think they can take them into conference if they like. I think they can discuss it separately with their parents, but not necessarily with the parents of the prospective bridegroom.
Oh, I see. Well, suppose the parents objected. What would you, as an ex-child prodigy...
As an ex-child prodigy, I don't think it would really matter to me. I think I'd still marry the man I want to marry.
You think you would, despite your parents or...
Yes, except I don't think that, well... I rather think that my parents would agree with me.
Oh, you think? Well, of course, if you bend your parents to your will, of course, then you have no problem. And Mr. Franklin, how do you feel about it?
Well, I think they should do what they want to do.
Do regardless of the parents, huh? You don't think they should do as they did years ago? Everybody sit in and hash it all over and the boy comes in for a third degree? And,
no, I don't think so.
You don't think so, huh?
No.
Well, I guess that's the new trend, and of course, I don't know. I know they told me I'm a minute over already, but what is a minute in eternity? A vice president waves a tired finger at you and tells you you're a minute over. What is it going to mean 20 years from now? Well, I think that we have we've accomplished practically something here. What it is, I won't know offhand until the votes are in. But I do think we have accomplished a lot this evening. Cupid has been set back 200 years. Youth has been put in its place. And parents restored to a position where they can run their own quizzes before the wedding. Now, on this note of delusion, we close our forum. And entirely unrehearsed, to our board, I say, thank you all a lot for your kind cooperation.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, Kenny Baker sings for us a southern medley, 3 old songs I'm sure you'll welcome once again. Old Susanna, I Cannot Sing the Old Songs, and Yalla Gal That Winked at Me. Will you proceed, Colonel Baker?
Your attention I ask for a while, a song I'm going to sing you. It's about a pretty yeller gal I met while I was walking, and she threw such a glance at me. She was pretty and as sweet as a flower, such clothes you never did see. She'd a darling little bonnet with the flower garden on it, had the yeller gal that winked at me. Oh my, she looked so sweet, and she dressed so neat with her tilting hoops and pretty little feet as she went skipping along. The pretty little yeller gal I met while I was walking, and she threw such a glance at me as she skipped across the gutter. My heart went in a flutter for the yeller gal that winked at me. I cannot sing the old songs I sung long years ago, for heart and voice would fail me, and foolish tears would flow. For bygone hours come o'er my heart with each familiar strain. I cannot sing the old songs or dream those dreams again. I cannot sing the old songs or dream those dreams again.
I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee. I'm a gwine Louisiana, my true to foresee. Oh, it rained all night in the day I left, the weather it was dry. The sun's so hot I froze to death, Susanna, don't you cry. Oh, Susanna, oh, don't you cry for me. I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee. Oh, Susanna, oh, don't you cry for me. I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee. Oh, Susanna.
Thank you. Thank you. And now we have a most unusual guest, Miss Minerva Bulge. What is your profession again, Miss Bulge?
I run an alibi clinic.
An alibi clinic? Well, just what is that?
Well, you get arrested for something, you call me, and I whip you up an alibi.
Oh, you mean if I get arrested...
I give you an alibi. Give me a case, and I'll show you.
Oh, now, let me see. Suppose my inherent kleptomania creeps up on me some evening, and I break into a cigar store and accidentally crack open the cash register. I'm caught in the act, so I call you up. Now, what alibi do you furnish?
You went into the cigar store to get a couple of cigars.
Yeah?
You was breaking open the cash register only to put in a nickel.
Marvelous. You not only supply the alibi, you know how much I pay for my cigars. Let me see. I'll try you with another case. Now, suppose I'm arrested for stealing a horse in a small town, of course. I call you up.
You seen a horseshoe and picked it up for luck.
Yeah.
Was it your fault a horse was fastened onto it?
Why? I didn't even notice the horse, little old short-sighted eye. Now, one more case. Suppose I'm pinched for blocking traffic because I can't get my car started. I call you up, Mr.
Don't call her, Fred. In that case, call me.
You, Jimmy, you have an alibi when cars won't start quickly?
A perfect alibi. You can blame duds, those sluggish, slow-action elements in gasoline, for those long, drawn-out starts that dangerously overwork your battery on cold days. And here's why. Duds get in their deadening work in the carburetor of your car, where you must get starting action from just a few ounces of chilled gasoline. Duds refuse to take the spark quickly. You don't want duds, and you don't get duds in Fire Chief. They're out. That's why Fire Chief's full power gives you fast start, spares your battery, saves you trouble. Yes, in Fire Chief, you're getting only the lively, responsive elements in gasoline. The ones that vaporize quickly, fire evenly. So next time, try Texaco Fire Chief. There's not a dud in a tank full.
Thank you. And now the Texaco Workshop players. Tonight, they present an episode based on Daryl Zanuck's great screen epic, Western Union.
Western Union.
Rush this, please. Birthday blank.
Western Union.
Kittygram 24, signed Papa.
Western Union.
Happy Mother's Day, Mother. Send it collect.
Western Union.
Night letter.
Western Union.
Day letter.
Western Union. Western Union. Western Union.
That is Western Union today. But back in 1865, things were different. In those days, a small band of hardy pioneers was surmounting insurmountable obstacles to string Western Union's wires through a hostile country overrun with savage Indians. Let us look back on the days when men were men and the Lone Ranger had somebody with him.
The year, 1865. The place, the howling wilderness, 20 miles south of Tutaw, Utah. Big Ed Allen and his brave little band of Western Union wire stringers are surrounded by Crow Indians. As our turkey opens, we find Big Ed and his sister Sue in their little shack. Indians menace them on every side.
Sister Sue?
Yes, Brother Ed?
Send a message through to Salt Lake, or we're done for.
What's the message?
Western Union, main office, Salt Lake. Surrounded by Crow Indians. Quick, send help. How many words is that?
Seven. You got three more.
Put in three more helps. Sign it, Big Ed.
Okay.
Now, if they'll only answer, we can hang on.
Look, an error.
Doggone them red heathens. I'll take another shot at them. There, take that, you scalping swine. Jeepers, if help don't get here from Salt Lake soon, it's the end of Western Union.
Another error.
It almost got me.
Why don't you give up and go back east, Big Ed?
Western Union has got to get through, Sue. Them ornery Crow half-breeds with their arrows and guns ain't a-stopping Western Union.
They might be a-stopping up.
Not yet, they ain't. Send another message through to Salt Lake. I'll tell them what I'm going through here. Maybe they'll send help faster.
What's the message?
Start off with a mess of helps.
Okay, what next?
Ma Day. 9 a.m. Send out wire stringing party of 8. 10 a.m. Send out party of 2 to bury party of 8. 11 a.m. Send out party of 1 to bury party of 2. Oh! There goes the party of 1. Well, you and me is alone, Sister Sue. What's that?
If it ain't my knees, it's someone to the back door.
Well, I'll kibble the door. Clear!
I've got it. I've got it, I tell you.
You got what?
At last, I have invented the telephone.
What's that got to do with me and Sue here, partner?
Isn't this the story of Alexander Graham Bell?
This is Western Union.
Oh, shoot, I'm in the wrong picture.
Hit the road, Amici. Doggone fool is double feature loco. A horse's hoofs. Who is it? Are them Indians charging?
Nope, it's a Kivert wagon pulling up back of a shack.
It's them reinforcements from Salt Lake, Sister Lou. We're saved. Open the door.
Okay, Big Ed.
Who are you, stranger?
Who else? Buffalo Al Goodman. Yippee.
Short-winded, ain't you? Western Union sends you?
No. Here's my card, Tenderfeet.
Buffalo Al Goodman and his prairie cat. Music for any occasion.
I'm a rootin' tootin' buckaroo from Western Local 802.
Yippee.
Well, we was expecting a band.
This could be it. Show him, partner.
Now, hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Stop that welding and caterwauling. Get going and take them disciples of pandemonium along with you.
Okay, okay. Goodman is hitting the trial.
That's real.
Who knows? I'm Fadiman, maybe?
Now, listen, Goodman.
Who is Goodman? Goodman, no longer Lincoln, is back with a new character.
Well, get out, both of you.
So we're going.
Worst mess of hillbillies I ever hear. I can get sweeter sounds. Phelan McAllister. Another bullet in the wall. Doggone shacks are full of lead. Every time I lean against a wall, I get writing on my back. Who's our Sister Sue? Look out.
It's four men in uniform.
Reinforcements at last. Open that door.
Okay.
Big Ed Allen?
Yeah.
Captain Baker of Western Union reporting from Salt Lake main office. Advance, man.
Right, Captain.
Okay, Captain.
Here, Captain.
Are you men Indian scouts, sharpshooters from Western Union?
No. We're Singagram Quartet, number two.
What?
We've got a singagram about your reinforcements. Let's go, men. One, two.
Though the Indians are here, reinforcements are near. Western Union is sending squad. Why? It is 500 strong. They'll be here before long.
No. 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 I'll finish this message or die. Go.
He'd get his word if he didn't do nothing else. Kept his word if he didn't do nothing else.
Look at the help they sent us, Big Ed, brother. The whole quartet laying there on the floor.
Well, it ain't the first singagram quartet that's been flat, sister.
Them blasted crow engines.
What are them yowling bucks up to now?
They're starting the war dance, making a big circle around the shack.
Looks like we're done for, Sister Sue. Looks like we're crow bait. Looks like the end of Western Union.
Reckon this is the engine chief.
Open the door slow, Sue, sister gal. I'll draw a bead on him.
Okay.
Come in, Redskin.
Redskin, he says. It is I, Goodman, again.
Buffalo Al. I thought you'd vamoose.
Frankly, the Indians are chasing Goodman and his band back with Sammy Hawks.
Tommy Hawks, you mean?
Tommy Hawks, Sammy Hawks, they are cutting your hair off.
Looks like we're done for, Big Ed, brother.
Hold on. Big Ed's got him an idea, Sister Sue. Buffalo Al, you can save the day. You can get rid of them Crow Indians.
How? A short line, but Goodman is saying it.
You can get back out to your wagon. You can get back out to your wagon, Buffalo. Tell your band to start playing. Soon as you begin playing, start your kibbered wagon rolling.
Conducting while driving? This is difficult.
Just start playing. Them Indians won't hurt you.
This I could have in writing, maybe?
Get out to that wagon and start playing. It's our only chance. What do you say?
Goodman, like a fool, is going.
Okay, boys, start playing. Brother, the engines, they're throwing away their guns and bows.
I knowed it.
They're running down the road, cheering and trying to get in the wagon.
Them Redskins is gone for good, Sue.
You're sure, Big Ed?
Them engines will follow Goodman and his music from now on.
How come, Big Ed, brother?
Them engines are crows, Sue, sister. And a crow will go for corn every time. We've saved Western Union.
Thank you. We're a little late, ladies and gentlemen. This is Fred Allen saying goodnight for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast. Good night.
This is the Columbia.
Massachusetts.